Hi, this is Paul Ingram of PainScience.com. It is Tuesday, February 13th, 2024, or at least that's when I'm recording it. I'm not sure when this one is actually going to make it out the door because I can't publish this after I read it. I have to go to the dentist instead. Hopefully in the next couple of days. What is a release in manual therapy? The concept of release is unavoidable in the fix people with your bare hands therapies, like massage, chiropractic, osteopathy, and some physical therapy. All of these are examples of quote unquote manual therapy. And if you are listening to this audio, then I will tell you, because you're a member, because only members get audio, that manual therapy in that first paragraph is linked to a brand new article about manual therapy, something I've been meaning to write for many years and finally got around to lately, just kind of jammed it into the cracks recently and published it. It's not completely ready, so I haven't announced it yet, but it's written and it's mostly ready, and so I linked to it there. And I will have to link to it from about 10,000 other places around painscience.com because manual therapy is something that comes up a lot. Right, where was I? I didn't even get to the end of the first paragraph before hitting a digression. The idea of release, the release idea, is baked right into the names of some famous methods like myofascial release therapy and active release therapy. Many other therapy brands just imply release, as with Melt and Fascia Blaster. Or the idea of release gets puffed up into something complex and grandiose, like with Rolfing, which claims to, quote, reorganize the connective tissues. That is a direct quote from Rolf.org, or at least it was when I wrote the first draft of this. Rolfing, you can just stay the hell away from my connective tissues. I have them all organized just how I like them. And finally, of course, too many brands also get a little overzealous chasing release through intensity. See above, Fascia Blaster. Rolfing is the most famous for this, and they have tried to tone it down in the last decade, but I don't think they're ever going to get over the reputation that they formed in the 80s and 90s. Too many people had extremely intense Rolfing experiences for that reputation to ever go away. Another classic example, the instrument-assisted soft tissue mobilization modalities, IASTM, I-A-S-T-M, like Graston and the similar acronym ASTM with a Y, and Gua Sha. These are all scraping massage and classic examples of provocation therapies, which have intense release close to their hearts. I have written circles around the idea of release for many years, but I have never just come straight out and defined it or explained what kinds of experiences inspire the term. So what could be actually going on when therapists or patients declare a release? What is changing in the body? Anything important? Or is it a marketing mountain being made out of a sensory molehill? Well, here's a quick definition of release. A release is a perceived improvement in how a body part feels or functions during or after manual therapy, usually, but not necessarily, assumed to be the result of a helpful change in tissue state. I think most releases are just overinterpreted transient sensations, overinterpreted by both therapists and patients. But what exactly is being overinterpreted? The idea certainly doesn't come out of nowhere. That definition is the tip of an iceberg of phenomena. Have you got a little release deja vu? This post about release is a re-release of one of the most popular members-only posts from the early days of my newsletter in early 2022, when most of you were not yet members. I wouldn't quite call this a rewrite, but it's certainly revised. I've added many thoughts and details, and this audio version, of course, because I now record almost everything that I write. If you feel like you've been released, then you've been released. Releases is not a technical term with a strict definition. It has only ever meant what people want it to mean. And so almost any positive experience in the context of manual therapy, any interoceptive shift that feels helpful, gets tossed into the release bucket. Let me pause to define interoceptive. Exteroception is the perception of things outside of you, beyond the edges of your body. Interoception is perception of things going on inside your body. And so an interoceptive shift is a change in your perception of what is happening inside you. Like pain itself, a release is entirely subjective. If you feel released, then you are released. It is up to you. It is more like an emotion than a physiological event. There may be a physiological event, or there may not be, but there is still your experience, and nobody can take it away from you. This imprecision is a double-edged sword. When it's used as a semi-serious term, it's a bit of a disaster. Sloppy, amateurish, a little deceptive, by implying much more precision and formality than actually exists. The widespread use of the word release is a good example of alternative medicine putting on airs, obnoxiously pretending to know much more than it actually does. That is my cynical bias talking. But I can also be more pragmatic and magnanimous. English is messy, and so are bodies and sensations. I think it's fair game to use fuzzy terms for fuzzy experiences. Release can be a perfectly cromulent word for some kind of nice change during therapy. Another way of summing this up is to say that I prefer the way patients use the term. Physically released, though, is it really physical? Some kind of tissue upgrade is supposedly involved in most releases, a happy change in tissue state, an objective, concrete, physical elimination, or even literal destruction of some hypothetical obstruction to normal function and sensation. But especially, many variations on the theme of tight tissue getting loosened. Some of these tissue upgrades might be objectively measurable. There could be an improvement in range of motion, for instance, or the sudden ability to move without pain. These experiences seem to substantiate the physicality of the release, a change that goes beyond just perception and sensation. But changes in sensation and function definitely don't always mean that tissue has changed, or not much, or not for long. And in fact, it's somewhat unlikely. I believe that the idea of a release as a physical change is mostly illusory, that we are mostly just straight up fooling ourselves, a kind of pareidolia, seeing shapes in the clouds of sensation and perception. We are probably perceiving and maybe even creating what we expect, like playing with a Ouija board, which is the most famous example of the ideomotor phenomenon in which people direct movement unconsciously. It moved, I felt it. Did you really, though? The three main things that supposedly get released. There are three major candidates for a hypothetical objective change in tissues that correlates with what we subjectively experience and call a release. One, looser fascia, sheets of connective tissue, that is. Two, reduced muscle tone. And three, increased joint mobility and function. And of course, it's possible that some of those occur together. Those are and/ors between each of those. Those are the big three. They account for most of the goals of all kinds of manual therapy. There are many others that don't quite fit, but they're relatively obscure. For instance, for contrast, a therapist performing manual lymphatic drainage might claim to be seeking releases of restricted lymphatic circulation. Cranial sacral therapy might be explained as a release of a restrictive pattern of cerebrospinal fluid circulation. Or the most notable exception, the release of stuck or stagnant energy that is the goal of every acupuncture session, which is not so obscure. But acupuncture also isn't actually as popular as acupuncturists would like us to believe, which is just one of many acupuncture myths. Release as a change in fascia. So fascia, for the uninitiated, many of you, most of my members probably know what fascia is, but a few probably don't. So let's just cover this quickly. It's gristle. It's the same stuff that you encounter in steak. Thin sheets of shiny, tough, tendon-like tissue that permeate and wrap every part of our anatomy at every scale, from micro to macro. Fascia science and therapy have been fashionable for 20 years now. The modern era of fascia fascination mostly started with physician Stephen Typaldos, who hypothesized in 1991 that most musculoskeletal complaints are caused by deformations of fascia. That was his word, deformations, which could be fixed with skillful force, like banging dents out of a car release. There are many different ideas about how to release fascia, how hard, what to pull on, tools or no tools, and so on. But they're all speculative, if not entirely pseudoscientific. No one has ever proven that painful fascial distortions exist, let alone that they can be released or repaired in any sense. And it has to be said that rapid fascial change is rather unlikely. Fascia is shockingly tough stuff. While it is not inconceivable that it could suddenly adapt to just the right stimulus, it's about as plausible as lengthening a tendon with one hard stretch. Short of injury, it probably just can't be changed. Let me say a little bit more about that off the cuff here in the audio. So if you pull hard enough on muscles and tendons, you will improve your flexibility. This is well known, well established by many studies. It is possible to stretch to increase flexibility, but that does not necessarily mean that you are increasing the extensibility or length of tendon, of tough connective tissue. We don't actually know exactly how flexibility increases, and there's been a very vigorous and technical debate for many years about whether it is more about the nervous system learning to tolerate more extension of muscles, more extensibility of muscles, or whether it's plastic change of the musculotendinous unit, or is it a bit of both? And this debate goes on. We still don't really know. But even if plastic change of the tendon is involved, it takes a lot. It takes a lot of work to increase flexibility. And you're certainly not going to increase the length of a tendon with one hard stretch or a hard hour of stretching. And if you can't do that, then it's also quite implausible that there would be short-term changes to large sheets of connective tissue in the body, or even small ones. There's a fairly famous study showing that the connective tissue on the bridge of the nose is absurdly tough and cannot be cannot be torn without really substantial force, far, far more than would ever be applied by a massage therapist. So it's tough stuff. And yet, many manual therapists do not just have a hopeful and humble hunch that they are changing fascia. They passionately and dogmatically believe it. And that industry-wide overconfidence is a major source of my release cynicism. Fascial release was a marketable idea that went viral without any clear clinical merit. And it still lacks it, even after many years of research, because most of the research is mechanism masturbation, which is studying how treatments might work rather than checking to see if they actually do work. I have written about this topic in much greater detail. For more details, see a link in the post or go to painscience.com/fascia for thousands and thousands of words more about this. Now on to another topic I've written a great deal about elsewhere, but looking at it in the context of release. Release as a change in muscle. So muscle tissue seems glitchy. There are many kinds of cramps, spasms, and twitches, dysfunctional muscle tissue states as diverse as bug species. Unlike fascia, the idea of a rapid change in muscle is superficially plausible. Massage and manipulation probably can sometimes change the state or behavior of muscle tissues, just like stretching can obviously stop an acute exertional cramp. However, most of those effects on muscle are probably clinically trivial. While it may be plausible that muscle can be affected by pressing on it, it is not very plausible that it can be done in any consistent, important, or lasting way. It might be possible, it's just not all that likely that meaningful change is a common result of typical massage, or even possible. Many unwanted contractions, the most obvious thing that we might want to change, are clearly impervious to therapy. For instance, several forms of twitching, technically called fasciculation, are simply not going to stop, no matter how you rub the muscle. The spasms caused by multiple sclerosis are not going to stop for any massage. Massage might feel good, it might even feel desperately needed, it might be excellent supplementary medicine, but it's clearly just a sensory band-aid. It's not going to actually change the pathological process that is driving those spasms. But I haven't mentioned the most important thing. Let's talk about the elephant in the muscle-changing room. What about trigger points? Aren't they a huge release candidate? Trigger points are what we call the sore spots, conventionally suspected to be painful micro cramps, strongly associated with aching pain and stiffness. Can't we release those? I would sure like to. I collect them, like squirrels hoard summer nuts. Many of us do, while others remain blissfully ignorant. A trigger point release is by far the best known example of something we tend to think of as a specific physical change in tissue induced by manual therapy, mostly massage, mostly from firm pressure and kneading of the sore spot. Which is weird, because no one actually knows what a trigger point actually is. So we can really only guess what is physically changing when they're rubbed, if anything. While no one doubts the existence of the phenomenon of sore spots, and I truly mean no one, not even serious skeptics, and there are some, not even people who are extremely skeptical about trigger point therapy as a whole, doubts the fact that we get sore spots. So despite that, trigger points are also extremely controversial and poorly understood. And most trigger point therapy is obviously experimental and amateurish and often ineffective. If only I had a buck for every time that someone has told me that they failed to get relief from trigger point therapy. And just as one of many examples of why it might fail, that's because lots and lots of things hurt that aren't trigger points, even though there may be aching or tender spots in the vicinity of that problem, doesn't mean that the trigger point is the cause of the problem. And so an awful lot of people have gotten trigger point therapy for something that was not, in fact, trigger points. The trigger points weren't the problem. They were bystanders, if they were there at all. So if trigger point release can make release seem like a more physical process, it's gonna need some better science to back it up. But ask anyone who's had a good experience with trigger point therapy. Nothing feels more like a release than a good rub of a bad trigger point. The perception of relief and release can be outrageously profound and delicious. And that phenomenon is arguably the main reason people love to love massage. And just because we don't understand something doesn't mean that something physical isn't happening. For perfectly understandable reasons, we may still just not know exactly what trigger points are. It's not like we have no evidence at all. Trigger points are not as fanciful as acupuncture points. They're There probably is something measurable going on in tissue, which might change when rubbed. And I have a full article about that. If I had to nominate a traditional release target as most likely to actually be a thing, I would pick trigger points.
Okay, so there's one more candidate for release as a physical change. Release as a change in joints. Stiffness, spinal cricks, and aches and pains of all kinds are often attributed to joints being stuck or subluxed, out of alignment, moving unevenly, and more. Some of these are real problems, and some are medical superstitions more than a century old, and some are stuck somewhere in between. And guess which extreme release mostly seems to apply to? Joint manipulations to the rescue. Joints can also be allegedly released from their prisons of dysfunction, mainly by chiropractic care, but all the manual therapies peddle this service to some degree. I had a mentor in massage therapy college that was very keen on identifying subtle abnormalities in spinal joint movement and then trying to correct them with extremely specific and subtle contractions. And that's a subset of muscle energy technique. A quarter century later, I hold this in some contempt as vague bullshit, not sophisticated therapeutic subtlety. That method is obviously extremely vulnerable to palpatory pareidolia, which is just like other kinds of pareidolia, seeing what we expect or want to see, seeing patterns in things, making more of them than they are, just as applied to touch. It's easy for therapists to think that they are feeling something that they expect or want to feel, even if it's not actually there. The diagnostic reliability had to be as low as it can get, and that's how well two trained therapists can agree on a diagnosis. If you got two people to do this assessment, even if they were both very well trained, would they come up with the same list of spinal joints that need attention? It's unlikely. And I think it's unethical to charge manual therapy fees to chase such highly speculative problems with joints. Joints certainly can get into various kinds of trouble, but most of the major problems are well understood and clearly have nothing to do with release. Good luck releasing a joint from the symptoms of arthritis. Good luck releasing a frozen shoulder. It's mostly not possible without dramatic and traumatic tearing of joint tissue, so much so that it's mostly only done under anesthesia. And even then, it doesn't always work. Intriguingly, one of the most obvious manual joint repairs is reducing a dislocation. And while no one ever calls that a release, it actually fits my definition perfectly, and it has a completely unambiguous physical explanation. It's more releasey than most of the things people do call releases. So that's the obvious possibilities. Many of the more speculative problems with joints aren't well understood enough to be good targets for release. As with muscle, manipulating joints could have some effects, probably does have some effects, but probably mostly only minor ones. For instance, spinal manipulative therapy is the undisputed king of joint release techniques, and yet there's a buttload of research showing that its effects on back pain are underwhelming. On average, it doesn't help people very much. There also seem to be many exceptions, and I've experienced dramatic relief from a nasty neck problem, this was many years ago, from what seemed very much like a release of a joint. It's a really short story. My neck popped, and I felt better. Release. The only thing that makes it a story, really, is how clear it was. My neck felt very painfully stuck. Very stuck and very painful. And it clearly got suddenly unstuck and a lot less painful. And the contrast was a big damned deal to me at the time. And yet, in several similar incidents in the years since, I have never again experienced anything remotely like that one time. It's fairly common for my neck to feel painfully stuck, and I've never been able to reproduce that effect in, at least a dozen noteworthy incidents over the years. For much more on this topic, I have a whole article about spinal manipulative therapy, and of course there's a link to that in the web version. So I mostly shut down the idea that there's something physical. Not entirely, but that I have minimized the possibility of a physical change that correlates with the experience of a release. I think that the only change that likely occurs with most releases is sensory. And this is not an insult. I am not impugning release by saying it's a sensory thing. Sensation is huge. I believe this is the main point of manual therapy, to create those sensory things. And it's plausible that sensory effects can include clinically meaningful improvements in pain. It is well-established pain science that sensory inputs can modulate pain. And this is probably the main explanation for the popularity of most of the therapies that you've ever heard of, as opposed to them changing your tissues. Any technique that produces novel sensory input can tinker with pain, and sometimes it might be a big deal, more than tinkering. I think this is a satisfying way to understand release. Certainly it's no worse an explanation than any of the other ideas explored here, but this relatively elegant explanation is also rarely what anyone actually means by release. Of the millions of therapists out there talking about release, very few of them, probably less than 1%, are thinking it's just a sensory thing. Most of them think that they are changing tissues. So I think it's satisfying, but I'm probably in the minority. And tinkering with pain is admittedly not exactly potent, reliable medicine, not in terms of what it can accomplish clinically. But it is routinely packaged with interesting stories, sympathetic attention and touch, and maybe quite emotional sensory experiences. And that stuff can really dial up the subjective impression that something very therapeutic has happened. So maybe what we get with the release is a combo deal. It is both a bit of actual pain reduction, but packaged with an emotional experience and, you know, basically a bunch of non-specific psychological effects of being therapized that really makes it seem like a bigger deal than it actually is. Than it actually is physically. It is a big deal as an experience. It's still a big deal as an experience. Okay, time for my cranky release recap. The term release is messy and informal to the point of being mostly pointless. It mainly means whatever people want it to mean in the moment, usually to fit whatever clinical narrative they are selling or buying. And those narratives tend to be obnoxiously overconfident and conveniently self-serving, contributing to the reputation and the marketability of therapeutic techniques. And that is why I tend to be so cynical about the concept of release, even though it could just be a harmless way of saying, well, something feels nicer. As usual, a little humility would go a long way to improving the world. Release definitely has no clear and clinically significant physical correlates. There might be a few physical correlates to some release experiences, but I think they're mostly quite subtle and fleeting. Things that can be felt by patients and palpated by therapists, changes that do occur at the time that you are trying to do something to tissue, but probably mostly just trivial muscular reactions and shifts in our ability to move based on a bit of pain relief. All of which provides very bias-confirming pareidolia fuel. Okay, that's my re-released, revised version of my release post. Thanks for listening, and talk to you next time.